I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, fact checkers call out Bob Ferguson for ignoring his history of corporate campaign contributions. Plus, a major Seattle influencer is being accused of being a squatter and a con man. And finally, what happened to you Republicans? Five words that speak volumes about media bias. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Lovely to see some of you this weekend. We had a signing event for Initiative 2066 in Bellevue, and the rain just barely held out for us. There's a few sprinkles here and there, but a lot of you showed up. It's always wonderful to meet some of our wonderful supporters, viewers, subscribers, and put a I love putting a face to people's screen names. You know, that Y was there, E was there. I said we were collecting a whole alphabet of people who just have one letter screen names, and a bunch of other people. And people were so sweet because I was laughing on the show that we were going to be there for 5 hours. So I was going to need coffee and lunch. So Matt Gilbert, one of our subscribers, he did a whole, he's like a barbecue extraordinaire, barbecuer.
Yeah.
BBQ. Whatever. He's going to make fun of us. Eh. He brought food for everyone. He served us all food.
Pulled pork.
And then there was a nice, I'm sure I remember his name now, brought us waters. And then
we had donuts brought to us from Renton. We had.
Oh, it was nice.
Yeah. Coffee money.
Money. Coffee money. So you guys are great. But as a reminder, if you could not make the event, please take time ASAP to sign Initiative 2066 to stop Democrats in Olympia from banning natural gas, another misguided climate policy that's only going to hurt the working class. Go to letsgowa.com, letsgowa.com, and you can find signing locations, or you can ask them like, hey, I'm not getting up and signing anywhere. You got to send this right to my door. And they'll send you a form, and you can sign it and have your family and friends sign it too. But lovely, lovely seeing all of you. And the 5 hours flew by. I was having a blast, All right, Bob Ferguson just cannot stop lying. The man. So many bad headlines for Bob Ferguson lately, which I personally enjoy. But there's, look, I'll take the opportunities to knock Bob Ferguson as they come to me. But also I'm looking for sort of wider themes, obviously, for the show. And I think that this has one of those. And that is this fallacy of I'm not taking corporate PAC money. Yeah, you hear that from Democratic candidates. I'm not taking a dime of corporate PAC money. Meanwhile, they'll line their pockets with union PAC money. You know, business money, bad. Union money, good. Even though they have the same contribution limits, they make it sound like corporations can just donate endless money to a campaign. That's not the case. They have the same limits. If I wanted to, as a business owner, donate money to Bob Ferguson's campaign, if I did want to do that, just unsubscribe and ignore me forever, because that would be the end of, I think, just me as a serious political commentator. But I would only be able to donate as much as I could as an individual. So it's this complete just fear. It's kind of a fear mongering, but like holier than thou thing. Like, oh, no, corporate PAC money for me. Meanwhile, they pad their pockets with monies from unions. So Bob Ferguson tried to do this over the weekend. He tweeted out, I refuse campaign contributions from corporate PACs and large corporations. I do accept contributions from icon Barbara Streisand, however. Thank you, at Barbara Streisand, and all of our end of the month supporters, blah, blah, blah. He posts a picture of Barbara Streisand from like 40 years ago, which,
oh, yeah.
Why, Bob? You don't think an older Barbara Streisand picture would have the same appeal? That seems kind of sexist. But anyway, so here he is bragging, like, I'll take money from the iconic Barbara Streisand and not from corporate PACs. Well, Community Notes on X, which is an opportunity for kind of certified users who've gone through the process that can submit, you know, context that's necessary under tweets or fact check tweets. And there's a whole process that goes about it. But Bob got hit with a community note, which I thought was hilarious because people were commenting on it like, that's not true. And adding community notes, you need to get in here, you need to do something. And sure as heck, community notes did. So it says on there, Bob Ferguson's campaign has accepted donations from large corporations, including Boeing, BNSF, and McDonald's, among many others. This information is easily accessible in mandatory elections filings. So there is more nuance to it than that, I will admit. However, it is just genuinely hilarious. And it speaks to just the worthlessness of this no corporate PAC money pledge. The truth is that Bob Ferguson has long taken money from corporations and corporate PACs. If you look, all of this stuff is disclosable, obviously. So the one of the links in the community notes was actually to something that shows some past contributions. So that's the part that I think is missing, that it's, I mean, he's been in public office, he's been the attorney general for 12 years, and now he's running for governor. But apparently, last campaign, it was fine to take corporate PAC money, but this campaign, that's evil. Who would dare take money from corporations? Just a few of the large corporations that have donated to Bob Ferguson during his political career: AT&T, Pfizer, Microsoft, Anheuser-Busch, Walmart, Google, Expedia, AOL Time Warner, McDonald's, BNSF, Weyerhaeuser, Boeing, Yahoo. Gosh, I don't know about you. I'm kind of a dum-dum, right? But I feel like those are large corporations. And those are perfectly fine. But it's evil now that he's running for governor to take money from corporations and corporate PACs. And then you look at his current donations for governor, and it's just a laundry list of major unions. And there's no difference there. Why is it any better to be influenced by unions than to be influenced by corporations? And corporate PACs are just made up of people in a corporation. So it's all just ridiculous. Now, if Bob Ferguson had come out and said, hey, I used to take corporate PAC money, I used to take money from corporations, but I'm not going to do it in the race for governor, here's why, that's a very different thing, right? You're being honest, you're being reflective, and you can maybe articulate why you're making the change. But you can't be holier than thou, I'm not taking money from corporate PACs, and not bring up, you know, the whole Pfizer, Expedia, Walmart, Microsoft, BNSF, Weyerhaeuser, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm glad that Bob Ferguson got called out on his rank hypocrisy. Mind you, if I ever run for office, I'll take your money no matter who you are. Honestly, you want to give me money? Fine. Big corporations? Fine. So I just love the sanctimony and all of it. Community notes. There's a lot of other things Bob Ferguson could have and should have been community noted on, but I'll take this one. All right. So talking about elections, we were on the show Thursday. And if you were watching live, the verdict in the Trump trial hadn't come down yet. And I'd have to go back and listen, but I'm pretty sure I said no way it's going to be a guilty verdict. Because I've said to you guys, I feel like I'm pretty tuned in, right? I mean, I have to be to do this show. And I had read endless reports and, you know, spent 25 minutes listening to a New York Times Pulitzer Prize winning journalist about the ins and outs of the case. And I still didn't fully understand what it was going to take to convict or the crime itself. And then the jury instructions were an hour and 40 minutes long. And I'm thinking, no way these jurors. And then they asked the judge to repeat them. I was like, no way these jurors are going to convict when we heard there was a verdict. We didn't know what it was. I'm like, nope, he's innocent then, or it's hung or something. But no, they came out 34 felony counts against former President Donald Trump. Now, I'm sure you've had your share of national coverage of that, so I won't dive into it too much, except to say I watched his walk-in at UFC, and that was quite interesting. If you haven't seen the video of, I think it was yesterday or the day before, former President Trump walking in with Dana White at UFC to quite the response and applause.
Warm welcome.
Warm welcome. Mm-hmm. But to localize it a little bit, you'll recall that a few months ago, at the beginning of this year, there was an effort in Kitsap County to remove Trump from the ballot because he committed insurrection. And that effort was led by a Kitsap County teacher who I said at the time was just what I expected when it came to what voter was trying to get Trump off the ballot for impeachment. And when the case failed, and Trump wasn't obviously taken off the ballot by a judge over impeachment, she was a sore loser and just insulted the intelligence of Trump supporters.
I mean, if they want
what
to
if everyone it, wrote it in?
Good luck spelling.
So what's the point of removing his name from the ballot?
Yeah, suggesting that if you decided to vote Trump in, or to write Trump in, if he wasn't on the ballot, that you wouldn't be able to spell his name. Yeah, that's the kind of people we're talking about here. So that failed. Well, these 34 felony counts give Washington State Democrats another excuse to try to remove Trump from the ballot. Which, before I even dive into this, is kind of a dumb idea, isn't it? first of all, there's the principle of the matter. Like, you don't want to vote for him, so you don't want anyone else to have an opportunity to vote for him, too. That's weird. The second thing is, he's not going to win here. And him being on the ballot is actually pretty destructive, I think, to down-ballot Republicans in a state where Trump has had, like, a 30% approval rating. So why would Democrats want him off? Because to me, Trump's the death knell for Republicans down ticket. So you'd want him front and center. So all the other Republicans, you could align with him. So I don't understand the desire to take him off. If I was a Democratic strategist, that is not something that I would pursue. But as always, there are people who are just so ideological that they need to spend time trying to go after Orange Man Bad. So Danny Westney with the Seattle Times, here's his headline. Plot twist. Waugh has a law against felons running for office. Now, Danny Westneed is a columnist, so it's important to remember that he gives his opinion. And here's what his article says. If local, well, first of all, he encourages local Republicans to somehow put a different presidential contender from the right on the ballot. I'm not really sure how that would work since he's the party's nominee or whatever. It says, if local Republicans knew what was good for them, they would now move to drop Donald Trump from Washington's fall ballot. I know they won't. They're in too deep. Trump won 76% of our state's GOP presidential primary vote. It's become like a cult as the party seems eager to debase itself by shedding all its longstanding talk about the rule of law and personal responsibility, as well as any chance of winning here in Washington, to sink even deeper into the muck of Trump. Now, again, I don't know how the state Republican Party would have a choice in removing someone from the ballot or how that would even work. And we can get into some of the points he makes there about Republicans now supporting Trump, who has 34 felonies, but talking about law and order. You know, we could have conversations about that all day long. But here's where he gets into these efforts to use a old Washington state law to try another round of get Trump off Washington's ballot. It says, here's another reason to dump Trump from the Washington ballot. If Republicans don't do it, somebody else probably will. It turns out Washington has a law on the books against convicted felons running for office. It was first established back when Washington was a territory in 1865 that anyone convicted of infamous crimes could be blocked from holding elected office. That was modified in 1959 and then again more recently to the scheme we have today. Any registered voter can, quote, challenge the right of a candidate to appear on the general election ballot for any of five causes. State law says one of those causes is flashing in bold neon lights today, quote, because the person whose right is being contested was, previous to the election, convicted of a felony by a court of competent jurisdiction, the conviction not having been reversed nor the person's civil rights restored after the conviction. So now there's this question of can they or would they, right? Well, Danny Westney spoke to an attorney who says that he has clients lining up to try to do this. So this is just isn't Danny Westney with the Times saying, hey, they could do this. Democrats, here's the law. You could do this. No, yes, some people are saying they will. He spoke to David Vogel, who's a Seattle attorney and former deputy prosecutor for King County, who was briefly involved with the first effort to get Trump off the ballot. He told the Times, I have clients lined up who are going to be all over pursuing a ballot challenge in this case. Danny Westneed says, I asked the Secretary of State's office if there was some reason this provision allowed ballot challenges against convicted felons might not apply in this case. For example, is it only for state and local candidates, not federal? And the Secretary of State's office told him, quote, whether that provision applies would be a good question for courts to decide. So my reading of it is that it has to do with state and local elections, but that wouldn't stop somebody from trying to challenge it. And then similar to the Kitsap case, hopefully there's a sane judge who says, look, no, I'm not going to remove Donald Trump from the ballot. But they can waste their time doing that while we focus on the issues and other critical things impacting Washington state. Fine. I actually, like, as annoying as it is, you do you. If you want to do that and twiddle your thumbs doing that, fine. It just says a lot more about you than it does about anything else. But here's the line in this entire Danny Westneed article that I gotta say really got to me. He said, he talked to a bunch of Republicans in the state and candidates and asked them about this. And Republicans were pretty lockstep that they felt that the prosecution against Trump was politically motivated. And so he said one thing conspicuously missing. Nobody said he didn't do it. Nobody said he's a good man. He's innocent. Even his staunchest defenders know he did it. Here's the line, five words. He says, what happened to you, Republicans? What happened to you, Republicans? So that's Danny West, Nate, suggesting in those five words that Republicans have lost all their morality, are complete hypocrites because they support a felon for president, and have lost all the sort of moderacy that Republicans in this state are known for. Here's the reason why that line bothers me so much. The media in the Seattle Times has always been more critical of Republicans, long before Donald Trump. Long before Donald Trump. Everything is the fault of Republicans, even at times where Democrats have been in full control of the state. They've always been critical of Republicans. And now he wants to come out and say, what happened to you, Republicans? You know, you vilified them for so long. Now they're just don't care anymore what you think. They don't care to try to prove their moderacy to you. Because even when they were, by and large, very moderate, even when Donald Trump wasn't particularly popular in this state, which has been never, ever since he started running, you've still tied all the Republicans here to Donald Trump. You've still vilified them as MAGA, right-wing, lockstep with the Democratic Party. So if you're going to call them that anyway, maybe they decided, well, let's just not hide it anymore. Let's just act like that. Let's just support Trump. They're going to vilify us. There were a lot of Republicans in the state who I think distanced themselves from Donald Trump because they knew it would be bad for them in a state like Washington. But what did they get for that? Well, they were vilified anyway. They were called MAGA anyway. They were called right wing anyway. So why are they going to distance themselves from him now when the Seattle Times and the Democrats are just going to call them the same thing that they've been calling them for 8 years? So what happened to you, Republicans? The media happened to them. Democrats happened to them. Lies and gaslighting and fear-mongering and accusations that Republicans are somehow to blame for everything that ails the state of Washington. Meanwhile, they have no power in Washington. That's what happened to them. And they finally stopped giving an F what you had to say about him. And they're supporting Donald Trump, and they're supporting him despite 34 felony convictions. And look, again, we can have agree to disagree on that. It is a difficult situation because, you know, Bob Ferguson came out and he said, we shouldn't have a felon, you know, I don't know his exact words. Like, basically, we shouldn't have a felon elected to the presidency or something. And it's like, well, he came out and supported Tara Simmons, who very proudly is a former felon elected to the state house in Olympia. So where's the line there? Where's the line of hypocrisy? I know the president of the United States is much different, but either you celebrate felons or you don't. So it's a push and pull, but there's also clear political implications of this case. This case would have never been brought if Donald Trump wasn't running for the presidency. Just plain and simple. Even talking heads on CNN said that. So that's not Randy. I don't even particularly like the guy. I've said that a million times. But what happened to you, Republicans? You always treated them like garbage. You've always treated them like garbage. And now you're acting like, oh, no, Republicans used to be great. We used to love Republicans and the moderates and all that. No. You've never treated them like that. All right, coming up next, a really interesting story that we haven't touched until this point because we've been doing a lot of digging into it and there's been some updates on it. But one of the biggest influencers in Seattle is being painted as a squatter and a con man. We'll dive into it coming up next. First, I want to talk to you about our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com, who came out to our signing on how much do you love Wes Jones? We get there. You know who's at our signing? Jaskaran Singh was there, the Bellevue landlord, who's now running for state senate because he has a tenant who hasn't paid him rent in 2 years. And then he's friends with Wes Jones, our sponsor. So Wes showed up and hung out for a little while, and I just adore Wes. Anyway, his clients adore him too. Bryce and Carla, who are fans of the Undivided podcast, they decided to reach out to Wes Jones when they sold their Bellevue home to retire to Florida. And Bryce says Wes was just full of knowledge about the market.
He was extraordinarily detailed. And he knew our neighborhood and our properties in the neighborhood very well. He gave us a really great comp plan, showed us what other properties were selling for. And most importantly, he helped us to understand the dangers of overpricing. And we thought what we knew we could get for the property, but we didn't, you know, at the same time, he breathed an air of reality into us, said, look, guys, you want to get that out of the property, you're going to need to start at a certain point, and you're going to let the market come to you. And that's exactly what happened. He was exactly right about that. So his knowledge of the market and his professionalism and his attention to detail is all that made the difference to us.
Sorry, Bryce, interrupted you there. Got a little premature. Wes knows a lot about the market because he's been doing this for a long time. He has been through the ups and downs of real estate. He knows what to do when interest rates are high and you might be worried about, am I going to get the best price for my home? So Bryce and Carla are very happy. They're now down in Florida, just living their best life. So if you're thinking about selling your home at some point this year, reach out to Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com. A better way to sell your home. All right, we have talked a lot about squatters on this show. This is really one of those issues that, we've certainly been talking a lot about, but I think nationally is getting much more attention. But the most recent case of alleged squatting in Washington State that is getting coverage is very unusual. And that's because of who the alleged squatter is. Allegedly, it's Steve Hickey. Who, if you don't know who that is, he is he's got more than a million followers on social media. He is an independent guerrilla journalist. So this weekend, Steve Hickey's face was all over signs in Maple Valley because there was a protest in Maple Valley from friends of a woman who says that Steve Hickey is squatting in a home she owns, refusing to get out, refusing to pay rent. And this is sort of a continuation of what we've seen, used in Bellevue against the serial squatter Sang Kim, just saying, look, we've tried everything. We're going to shame him into trying to leave. And even Jaskaran Singh was out in Maple Valley supporting this woman, Katrina Freitag, and her protest against Steve Hickey. So this story first came to my attention through Jonathan Cho, who covers, of course, a lot of issues around squatters and squatting for Discovery Institute. So here's what we want to do today. We're going to play some of Jonathan Cho's coverage of this so you can understand who Steve Hickey is and the extent to which he's being accused of not just squatting in this woman's home, but also being kind of a serial con man. And then on the back end, I'm going to talk to you about a conversation I had with Steve Hickey. Here's Jonathan Cho.
Semi on fire. They're still working on a water supply.
Steve Hickey's career is on a rocket ship.
Still on the run that I brought you on Friday before any other local outlet did.
The Seattle area independent journalist is known for being first on the scene and breaking big stories.
I'm here on a tragedy. This is Northbound Canyon.
His easygoing manner and simple delivery attracted more than a million followers on his social media platforms.
And I want to say thank you, Jeremy, for helping us out tonight.
And Hickey gives back. Look at this fundraiser for Seattle's Union Gospel Mission.
So they can help families in need.
Speaking of ladder trucks, he's also a King County Fire Commissioner in Ravensdale. An elected position that's earned him trust and respect.
So we thought, oh gosh, he protects and serves the community. Like, what a great guy.
Which is why the mounting allegations of fraud, theft, and intimidation.
That's the con man part of it.
Run counter to his well-crafted image of simply being one of the good guys in the community.
What happens when you buy a home and there's an old tenant who's been living in there rent-free for the last 2 years, who refuses to leave, leaving you with $1.4 million less dollars?
Earlier this month, YouTube journalist Tyler Oliveira and I exposed Hickey's alleged squatting scheme.
Get out of the house, Steve.
He's still refusing to move out of this expensive house in Ravensdale, even though he has no lease, and all the records show it's now owned by Katrina Freitag.
Is he taking people for their money?
They're now fighting it out in court.
How many more victims are out there?
I don't know how your week's going. Mine's been pretty rough.
In response to our expose, Hickey put out this video.
I've been sifting through a lot of really hateful messages calling for me to physically end myself.
Portraying himself as a victim and taking personal shots at our character.
And now instead of just continuing through the courts, she's instead recruited a local journalist funded by special interest groups.
But still no evidence proving he has a right to stay in the property. Regardless, this is apparently the tip of the iceberg.
Because he's just wanting to do a hit piece. This is clear.
When we now you're making this up now, Steve. If I wanted to do a hit piece, I could have done this 12 days ago. I gave you the benefit of the doubt.
Since the first story aired, more alleged victims have come forward to say Hickey's tentacles run far and wide. And aside from squatting, he's accused of running construction hustles for years.
A sister of a former veteran who says you stole her GoFundMe money. That was for ADA fixes in her house.
I never stole anybody's GoFundMe money.
Okay, I'm just saying there are all of these people now coming out.
Before pivoting into media, he owned and operated Meridian Build Group and was seen as a rising star in the industry.
Today, ladies and gentlemen, we have my good friend Steve Hickey. He's the owner of Meridian Build Group.
He even worked on State Senator Joe Wynn's house in West Seattle.
It's not just write me a check and I promise to do good things.
But around 2018 and into the COVID pandemic, records show mounting complaints and lawsuits against his business.
Stay away from this guy.
Ivan Baca says Hickey failed to pay for heating and air conditioning work on a project, taking off with close to $85,000.
How does that impact your company?
Well, we just lose the money. Our guys did not get the bonuses what they should get, and I mean, that's our losses.
According to the Washington State Department of Labor and Industries, Hickey still owes contractors and homeowners close to $400,000.
And he would not respond to us at all.
Jessica and Chris Scotty say they got taken to the cleaners as well and believe there are likely more victims out there.
We started calling suppliers to find out. We already found out two liens he left us with, so we go, oh my gosh.
Because of this, Hickey is no longer licensed to operate in Washington.
When he came up with no numbers and was absolutely just making things up, we knew that we had an issue.
When we brought these concerns to Wynn, he sent us a statement that reads in part, "I had a good experience with Steve, but I am also devastated for the other victims."
Notified multiple agencies.
As we follow the paper trail, court records show Hickey's been sued numerous times for questionable business practices and hit with several judgments. Angel Soriano is a contractor and is out more than $100,000 after laying concrete for Hickey.
He hurt me so bad, you know, hurt my family, hurt my company.
Like all the others, Soriano says he cannot go to the police since this is considered a civil matter.
Whatever comes around goes around, you know, that's what I think.
But says he doesn't have the time or resources for litigation.
You know, there's one God that sees everything, you know.
You believe God's going to handle this?
I think so.
Others say they're too embarrassed to step forward or are genuinely concerned Hickey could retaliate against anyone who complains.
He could ruin me. He just is a charlatan. He's a con man.
This person on the phone worked closely with Hickey during his time at Meridian and wants to remain anonymous, but says he takes advantage of all the legal ins and outs, always staying several steps ahead.
So from my experience in watching what he did, he would tell the contractor they were going to get paid over and over again, or he would get a payment from another job and pay them on that job.
In other words, robbing Peter to pay Paul. Approximately how many alleged victims of Steve Hickey do you know?
5.
Wow. That's now nearly 30 people that we're aware of.
I know.
And the amount of time and...
Interior design company owner Joe Cordray says Hickey stiffed him for more than 30 large.
I mean, he never had any intention of paying at all.
He says Hickey counts on alleged victims giving up instead of fighting through a long, drawn-out legal process.
Court battles and expenses, it's...
Which is why he keeps getting away.
So is this like his playbook?
100%.
However, it appears Hickey's house of cards is now starting to fall apart. Aside from alleged victims of construction fraud, he's now accused of abusing his position and power as commissioner at Fire District 47. South King County Fire Captain Bradley Cheney sent out a scathing email to all public information officers in the region, warning them about Hickey's unprofessional behavior. Cheney also says several first responders complained about Hickey, concerned he was using his commissioner's badge to access highly sensitive situations in the field, then live streaming it all on social media without giving a heads up to the cops and firefighters on scene.
Be voluntarily leaving.
He's now on administrative leave from the fire station pending the outcome of this investigation.
Could you explain what that means for the public?
That was launched because of our reporting.
Could you tell us why you decided to take a leave of absence?
I have no comment.
I confronted Hickey about all the new accusations, but for the first time, he's choosing to stay silent.
Folks have said that you haven't paid subcontractors. Also, there are numerous liens, according to LNI. Multiple people have filed lawsuits. Could you explain why those people are doing that? You plan on paying anyone back, Steve?
As Hickey rushed to avoid my questions, he also clearly blew through a stop sign, potentially adding to his legal woes.
We're going to see you at some sort of national news thing.
Hickey is now on a crisis management tour, hoping to salvage what's left of his reputation. Many of his followers online remain blindly loyal, dismissing the damning evidence. But even some of his supporters acknowledge he's losing badly in the court of public opinion and needs a legal win to get back on track.
I think it's going to continue to stay pretty hyper-local.
As for Freitag, she doesn't necessarily want Hickey canceled and also believes in redemption if all his alleged victims are made whole. But she wants to make sure this never happens again.
You need to be courageous and have the integrity.
And wants Attorney General Bob Ferguson's office to look into Hickey's companies.
To do what's best for the greater good.
That's why Freitag is urging more victims to step forward so they can collectively seek accountability. Not just against Hickey, but against Washington state lawmakers who have allowed these absurd squatting and deadbeat tenant situations to spiral out of control.
That reporting again from Jonathan Cho with Discovery Institute. Now, here's the deal. You know, this story first came on our radar about 10 days ago. And since then, we've been reaching out to Steve Hickey. We have been talking to Jonathan Cho. We've been looking for documentation to prove the claims. And I'll say this. These accusations are huge. I mean, you know, they align with a story we've been talking about, which is this a case of squatting? Is this something that is allowed by Washington State's insane policies? It's also a story about right and wrong, but I know firsthand what it takes to build a large following over a long period of time. And so I also understand that for Steve Hickey, he ought to have an opportunity, if he chooses to take it, to rebut those accusations. So tomorrow on the Undivided podcast, Steve Hickey will join us for an in-depth conversation where we are going to go point by point to all the accusations that he is now facing. It is an interview we have already taped. We taped it, Nicole, last week, I believe, and wanted an opportunity to track down and put some legwork in on some of the things he told us. So tomorrow on the Undivided podcast, during a regular live show, Steve Hickey will join us to respond to these accusations that he's not only a squatter, keeping a woman and her four children out of their home, but that he has a history of bad business dealings that have screwed people out of a lot of money. So part dos of that story coming up tomorrow on Undivided. All right, we know that there is a homeless crisis in Washington State, obviously. We know that that homeless crisis is getting much, much worse. We know that we're spending far more money than we ever have on that homeless crisis. And we also know that there has been recently an added layer, and that is that asylum seekers are now coming to Washington State and putting an even further strain on our already taxed homelessness system. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So I want to start with, again, revisiting numbers we told you about on the show a couple weeks ago. All this money, billions of dollars that have been plugged into the system, taxpayer dollars, to try to combat homelessness, which is, you know, a mixture of drug abuse and mental illness. And we have nothing to show for it. We have nothing to show for it. I can't underscore that enough. Not only do we not have anything to show for it, we're worse off than we've ever been. In King County, homelessness from 2022 to 2024 is up 23%. Right now, there are at least 16,385 people in King County alone who are homeless. And that's, I say at least, because that's done by a point in time count where they go out and they count heads and see if they can get an actual number of the people who are living on the streets. I'm pretty sure they miss some in doing it that way. And that's just King County. That's not to say what's going on in Snohomish County and Pierce County. We know that homelessness is no longer just a King County issue. So billions of dollars, 23% up. And meanwhile, you still have people out there on the streets living in squalor, living in filth, dying with needles in their arm. How many times have we watched stories from Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle where she's out and her team of volunteers are out cleaning up a camp that's been there for years with hardly any outreach? So as if it's not bad enough already, now we add the layer of asylum seekers onto that. So we know that there is an immigration crisis at our southern border. This isn't a segment on immigration. You know, we talk about that enough, but it is a segment on how that migrant crisis is taxing an already taxed system. So these migrants come up here seeking asylum because of border policies that are in place by the federal government. And our communities that already don't have enough resources that are well managed to deal with this now have to figure out, what do we do with asylum seekers? And they don't have an answer. No one has an answer. So asylum seekers are trying to find shelter where they can. We've done stories on them, you know, getting shelter in churches or setting up what are basically homeless encampments in city parks that you should be able to visit and enjoy with your family, but are now makeshift homeless encampments for asylum seekers. This from the Seattle Times. Asylum seekers looking for shelter start an encampment in Kent. So they can't find shelter. They want King County to put them up in a homeless hotel. But what happens when they start an encampment? Well, they can't be there. So Kent sends Kent police in. According to the Times, Sunday afternoon, three Kent police officers stopped by to announce a 48-hour eviction notice from King County with a deadline of 3:17 p.m. tomorrow. So they set up camp there, and this is the same old story. Well, you can't be here. You can't be in this big homeless encampment in a park. And there was a letter from the county saying, you know, you can't do this. They put it on a fence. It said, people who don't leave are subject to arrest for trespassing. A few shouted, shame on you, and banditos, as the officers left. But again, you now have Kent, the city of Kent, which I think has done a better job than most at trying to be realistic about not dealing with the encampments to the extent that Seattle has, because there's so many quality of life issues that come along with that. And then Kent, much like many other South King County cities, everything is dictated to them from the mount by Dow Constantine and the King County executive, how they're going to deal with things and whether they're going to be able to stop encampments. So they have virtually no power to deal with the existing homeless crisis. And now, because of the federal government's failure, there is a whole new homelessness crisis that involves people who aren't even from this country, who are now putting an even further strain on the system. And it's not just like, oh, there's more tents everywhere. You have to remember what comes along with a transient sort of population and homelessness. There's increased, this is just data. There's increased amounts of crime related to it, quality of life issues. We know when this was happening down in South King County, the police department was stretched thin responding to a church with issues. So this is one of those cases where I don't know who to blame. I don't know who to blame because, I mean, obviously I blame the Biden administration for allowing this sort of unfettered access across the border. You know, you might argue, even if every single one of these people has a legitimate asylum claim, right? We are now, and our communities are being stretched to the point where it's not tenable. I mean, even in other places like New York, where they're taking over schools and children's playgrounds, that just can't be the place that we're in. So I blame the Biden administration, but honestly, you know, Washington State, it's a welcoming state. That's what it wants to be. It's got its sanctuary policies, but we're going to bear the burden for that reason of a large number of these asylum seekers because our system is pretty flexible when it comes to your immigration status. So if we thought, and if you hear any elected leaders suggesting that we're making progress on the homeless crisis or we're making a dent in the homeless crisis and we're heading in the right direction, which you'll hear a lot of that in an election year, that's a lie. It's not true. But it's also going to get much worse because we don't know what to do with these asylum seekers. No one from the city level to the county level to the state level to the federal government has a clue what to do with them. But they are already here. And I'll also note, just to add sort of an extra layer of concern, tomorrow the Biden administration is going to come out and allegedly he's going to sign an executive order that cracks down on some of the people seeking asylum at the southern border. There's going to be a lot of turning people around. That's what the Biden administration claims. I hope they do that. But at the same time, behind the scenes, something that just came to light in the New York Post and some other outlets is that the Biden administration has been quietly giving mass amnesty for individuals who are here in the country and they have pending asylum cases, at least 350,000 of them since 2020 have just had their record cleared and basically been given amnesty. According to the Post, data shows that since 2022, more than 350,000 asylum cases filed by migrants have been closed by the U.S. government if the applicants don't have a criminal record or are otherwise not deemed a threat to the country. This means that while the migrants are not granted or denied asylum, their cases are terminated without a decision on the merits of their asylum claim. They are removed from the legal system and no longer required to check in with authorities. The move allows them to legally, indefinitely roam the U.S. without fear of deportation, effectively letting them slip through the cracks. And I'll tell you right now, a lot of them are going to slip through the cracks and then be in our social safety net. So every single taxpayer, again, this isn't about, oh, migrants, now close the border, whatever it is. That's a totally separate conversation. This is about the strain on a system that is funded by taxpayers. Of course, that's the only money the government gets. It's our money. And they're not explaining to us what they're going to do, how we're going to be able to afford this, and how we can make sure that if they're going to be here, you know, they're not camping in parks. They're not taking over schools so that kids in New York have to go home and learn remotely. So we're in a crisis situation already. And this is crisis on top of crisis on top of crisis. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to get notified of opportunities to do just that. All right, our friend Ben Bailey took the first mark challenge because some of you listen when I say, hey, I'm trying to save you money here. You don't have to pay first mark anything. And if you take the first mark challenge, they could dramatically decrease your insurance costs. So our friend Ben Bailey listened. He says he and his wife, Leslie, saved over $1,500 a year.
You know, more than anything, it was really kind of drilling down and looking at the current coverages that we have today. And if those were adequate for, you know, say, if we had a major incident here at the house, you know, were our cars covered adequately? Or were they actually, in our case, over-covered, right? We have one car that's fairly new and another one that's a few years old. And the one that was a few years old actually has had too much coverage on it. So that helped as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you're short on cash as a family, you've gone through your budget and you're like, we have gotten rid of everything, we're not eating out anymore, whatever it is, because inflation and all this. And you might be looking at insurance and saying, well, I can't cut that. You know, you need insurance. I can't cut my homeowner's insurance. But you can have First Mark Insurance take a look at it and let you know if they can find you a policy with another carrier to be able to save you money. Or maybe you're paying for insurance that you don't even need in some cases. So take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. They work for you. There is a reason that both Nicole and I are personally insured through First Mark, and the Undivided podcast is personally insured through First Mark. All right. Oh, I love it. I love it when I'm right, which is, you know, 99.9% of the time, obviously. I spent a full half hour on Thursday's show railing about a hit piece done about me by Crosscut, which is now called Cascade PBS. And to my utter surprise, unbelievably, they agreed to issue several corrections. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right. Yes, this is a little self-gratifying, right? Yes, I would like to just say that I ranted for 30 minutes about this unbelievable hit piece with shoddy reporting that I had the receipts to disprove multiple claims. And now they went back and issued at least a dozen corrections. So I want to brag about that. But I think the extent to which this story was so deeply flawed and this narrative about me and about some of our efforts to oppose misguided climate policy, I think that this shows this larger narrative of just how much the powers that be are threatened by any pushback against their climate industrial complex and will lie, will manipulate reality, will manipulate the truth in order to try to keep all this money flowing in. So there's a broader, I mean, yes, I want to toot toot, but also I want to point out the extent to which this story was flawed on such an important topic that's going to be on the ballot in November. So on Thursday, I read for you from a piece headlined in Crosscut, "Why Conservative Groups Are Banding Together to Dump Carbon Pricing." It said, Redmond hedge fund manager Brian Haywoods is spending millions to end cap and invest. He's got a web of organizations and Brandy Cruz backing him. Now, if you go to that article today, you will see this little clarifications at the bottom. They're calling it clarifications. I'm calling it corrections. This version of the story has been updated in several places to clarify Cruz's stand on these issues and to make it clear that her podcast sells ads to Project 42 and does not have any other financial relationship with the organization. So here is the gist of the Cascade PBS story. I'm sorry, I always call it Crosscut because they kind of changed to Cascade PBS. The general gist of it was, and I knew this was going to be a hit piece from day one, that their reporter came to Bellevue, did an interview with me, barely wrote anything I said down. I think was surprised I even agreed to do an interview. Nicole was telling me she got the impression he just wanted me to say no so he could go and write his story. But I'm like, hell no, I'll go meet him. Talked to him, gave good points, didn't write hardly any of it down, sent him follow-up emails, never responded. But one thing he kept saying to me over and over during this interview off the bat was, this is going to be contentious. My questions essentially are going to be contentious. And he kept saying that and saying that. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, I was a journalist for many years. Like, I ask contentious questions of people all the time, but I never prefaced it with, I'm going to be an ass to you, you know? So that just told me that he had this narrative in his mind and he was there to like kind of pick a fight with me and not really get my perspective on things. But the whole gist of the article he's writing is conservatives, there's this dark, shadowy web of conservatives who are trying to get the Climate Commitment Act repealed. Okay, so yeah, I am trying to get the Climate Commitment Act repealed. No one's paying me to do that. I'm doing it because it's a crap policy that makes the working class more poor, and it's a policy Jay Inslee is incapable of telling the truth about. He lies and says, oh no, that's not increasing gas prices, and the media didn't call him out on it for a year. So yeah, I am absolutely on board and will team up with anyone who wants to help repeal the Climate Commitment Act when Initiative 2117 goes before voters in November. But the suggestion here is that we're up to something nefarious, that you have this web of organizations and they're paying us on the podcast to oppose it, to call for State Senator Marco Elias to be recalled over his lies about the CCA, and that I'm not doing that just because that's my opinion. And I have a show where I say my opinion, but I'm doing it because Future 42, one of our wonderful show sponsors, must be paying me to do it, which is just not true. It's just demonstrably false. So what I thought would be fun, just so you can realize the extent to which words can be manipulated, and you guys know this because I think you're very savvy news consumers, but the extent to which words can be manipulated to fit a certain agenda and how just small changes even can dramatically change the appeal of the story, I thought we'd go through some of the corrections, shall we? Okay, let's do it. So one of the big corrections, and these are things I asked for, by the way. They didn't just correct it because they watched my show and they were like, well, Brandy's mad, so we should issue some corrections. No, I sent their editor, and I'll give Donna Blankenship a lot of credit. She responded right away. I got no pushback from her. She CC'd the reporter, who hadn't responded to me when I texted him saying, I want some corrections. Who do I reach out to? She responded right away. And they corrected everything that I said should be corrected because I had all the receipts for it. So I'm going to give her a lot of credit for that. You get things wrong in journalism, whether you're willing to correct it says a lot about you. Now, I would argue that this entire story is flawed and the premise of it is flawed, but I'm going to give at least the editor credit in making the corrections happen. So one of the corrections I asked for is their insinuation that I'm somehow backing Brian Haywood. Now, I like Brian Haywood with Let's Go Washington, who's been paying for these initiatives, but I'm not supporting the initiatives because I am buddies with Brian Haywood. I don't care who's running the initiatives. I'm supporting the initiatives because they're all common sense. They're all good ideas, and they reverse bad policies. So one of the corrections they made, they said, speaking to Brian Haywood, he's got a web of organizations and Brandy Cruz backing him. And they changed that to the initiative has a web of organizations and Brandy Cruz backing it. And that's important. And I know it seems small, but think about what they're trying to insinuate, that Brian Haywood, this rich hedge fund manager, again, it all plays into their overall narrative that we're being paid to do this. Brian Haywood, this rich hedge fund manager, he's got Brandy Cruz backing him. No, I'm not backing Brian. I like Brian. I support what he's doing. I'm backing the initiative because it's bad policy. Let's move on, shall we? This gets to the heart of their claim without saying it, right? It's a vague insinuation, and then they leave their readers to fill in the pieces, which is something the media does very, very well. So their original story said Project 42, through its communications branch, does financially support conservative political podcaster Brandi Cruz, an outspoken critic of Cap and Invest. No, they don't financially support our show. It sounds like they're just giving us money. They buy ads on the show. So that's what they corrected it to, that Project 42 buys ads on Brandi Cruz's conservative political podcast, and they added this line. But just like with any other journalism organization, buying ads does not buy any control of the content. They added that line because basically I told them to. Because I pointed out that Crosscut has sponsors such as Amazon, Alaska Airlines, the ACLU. And when I pointed that out, does that mean that Crosscut, and you can leave that up, Nicole, does that mean that Crosscut is bought and paid for by the ACLU and by Amazon? I don't think so. So you're criticizing me for one of my sponsors suggesting I can't possibly be unbiased about it when you do the same thing. So they added that line, which I thought was very good. They also corrected this. They said I called for State Senator Marco Elias to be recalled by voters because we disagree about how revoking the Cap and Invest program will affect funding for transportation projects. I told them no. I don't call for politicians to be recalled because I simply disagree with them. Otherwise, I'd spend every waking hour calling for politicians to be recalled. I said I'm doing it because he lied, and here's where he used his government Twitter account to lie to voters, to fearmonger them about what would happen if the CCA gets repealed. So they changed that line to that I've called for him to be recalled by voters because I believe that he has used his government social media account to lie. See the difference there? Yeah, I don't go out on a limb and call for politicians to be recalled simply because I am just so thin-skinned and I just cannot handle disagreement. No, the man's a liar, and I'll say today he should be recalled for doing that. Let's do one more, shall we? I'm just having the best time. It says, in another podcast, it went into these things that it says I got wrong about the CCA and the Climate Commitment Act money, which I didn't get wrong. Another podcast, Cruz criticized the state's purchase of a 2,000-acre chunk of forest with $70 million in Cap and Invest money, saying even Franz opposed it, the Commissioner of Public Lands, Hillary Franz. Never said that. I never said Hillary Franz specifically opposed that $70 million budget line item. What I did say, and what I provided them with video of before the story, is Hillary Franz giving a speech in November of 2023 where she said that closing down working forests is a dangerous idea if you think it's going to help the climate. And it actually leads to less carbon sequestration and makes those forests more susceptible to wildfires. So they changed that. They made it more specific. Cruz said even Franz disagreed with the idea that shutting down working forests will help the environment. You see the big difference there? In one side, they're calling me a liar, basically, saying I got something wrong. And in the other side, they're being more nuanced and saying, well, actually, Franz did say that. And then one more. In an interview, Cruz stood by her story. She did not contact Washington DNR prior to her story. Except I sent them the email of Nicole repeatedly reaching out to DNR. They had the email prior to writing that inaccurate line, so then they updated it. In an interview, Cruz stood by her story. She said she tried several times to get Franz on her show to discuss the issue, but did not succeed. And they didn't even have to say she said. We sent them the email. We did try to get her on several times. So you see how all of those corrections, and I didn't even ask for corrections on things that weren't about me. The story also talked about Future 42, Project 42, Citizen Action Defense Fund. I'm not going to ask for corrections to something that's not about me. That's not my business, right? Although I think there are some things in there that should be corrected still, but they corrected everything I asked them to correct. Now, there's the overarching problem with this story, and that gets to the bigger picture and not just me, you know, bragging that I got these things corrected. When you look at this story, and a lot of the pushback against Brian Haywood and people who want to repeal the CCA in November, you know, Jay Inslee sending out fundraising emails saying this is rich people who hate the climate, like Steve Gordon and Brian Haywood and Kemper Freeman, and shaming them for that. Has it been brought up at all that the no on 2117 side has raised far more money from far richer people? You notice that if it's spent on the side that wants to repeal the CCA. Oh, evil, evil. If it's Bill Gates donating to help stop the repeal, oh, well, that's great. Great. Someone who's far richer than Brian Haywood. Multiple, multiple, multiple times richer. But that's completely acceptable. But God forbid conservatives in the state band together on anything and even try to put an ounce of the effort in that Democrats have put in over the years. And now you need outlets like Crosscut trying to say, oh, that's shady, but it's not shady on this side. It's shady when a hedge fund manager gives $1 million of his own money to help voters repeal the CCA. But it's not shady when Bill Gates gives his own money to help keep it, to help keep your gas prices high, to help keep you poor. Like, this is crazy stuff. The other thing I pointed out, and I'll follow up with him about, is why aren't you asking the Seattle Times about their financial backers for their climate lab reporting? They have a whole entity at the Times, a whole team that covers the climate from the kind of climate change Jay Inslee perspective. And it's backed by very wealthy people on the left. No issues there. So it's complete, complete double standard. All right, shall we move into some national news? I think we shall. So Anthony Fauci testifying in Congress, which I knew, we're gonna have more clips of that tomorrow, right? It's gonna be a long day. But there was just one video in particular that we wanted to play with you for you today, because I think it speaks to an issue we talked about quite a bit on the show. And that was the idea that the government knew that the COVID vaccine wasn't doing with the COVID vaccine what we thought it was gonna do, yet they still pushed it on people and even cost people their careers.
Did the COVID vaccine stop transmission of the virus?
That is a complicated issue, because in the beginning, the first iteration of the vaccines did have an effect, not 100%, not a high effect. They did prevent infection and subsequently, obviously, transmission. However, it's important to point out something that we did not know early on that became evident as the months went by, is that the durability of protection against infection and hence transmission was relatively limited.
Yeah, but even after they knew that, we still had a vaccine mandate in Washington. We still were saying goodbye to career public servants who we desperately needed. The people who help make sure our ferries are operating on time, on schedule. The people who keep us safe, firefighters and police officers. There hasn't been one iota of humility, of reflection, mea culpas, or anything from the people who pushed all of us on this for years. And I would be willing to give them a free pass for the stuff that was done early on. You know, for the things that were said about the vaccine right as it was being rolled out. I'm willing, or would be willing, to give them a free pass for that when we were in this freaky situation. And even I was like, yeah, I'm not going to leave the house. I'm going to do what they tell me to do, and I'm going to mask up. But as new information became available, science and a scientific approach would dictate that then your response changes. But that's what never happened. The response never changed. And Governor Inslee didn't have the humility to just say, hey, we were going based on what the CDC was saying, the best available information about the vaccines. The vaccines aren't doing what we thought they were going to do. So no, we're not going to fire people if they don't get it. Would that really have been so hard? Would that really have been so hard? Is that really too much to expect from a leader, from someone who'd been the governor of our state for 12 years? I don't think so. Do you think so? And also, it puts us in an even more precarious situation when there is another pandemic. Because half the country is going to be like, screw you, I'm not listening to a word you're saying. And maybe the next pandemic is more deadly, is more dangerous, does spread more easily. So if that's the case, and half of America revolts, well, they're going to have done it. The leaders who were in charge during COVID will be responsible for that. How do we trust them anymore? How do we trust that they're being honest and forthright with us about what they know, what they don't know? It's really crazy stuff. And that more of these government workers haven't gotten their jobs back or haven't won big lawsuits is really just beyond me. All right, let's talk about the, yeah, we're going a little late, but I'm having fun. Why get off now? So this is just part and parcel for the government. So you look at all these things, and this is kind of my issue with the Trump thing too. Like, we're talking about accusations that go so far back to 2015, you know, when the payment allegedly was made. I think it was 2015, might have been a little earlier. And you're going after him now in New York, where they let criminals slide all the time. Like, crime's out of control in New York. New York City has the same issues we have here with, like, activist judges, low sentences, repeat offenders. And so it's an issue of what are you choosing to prioritize and why? So that takes us to California, where we talked about this previously on the show, how there's a yoga teacher down there named Nama Steve, which I love. And he taught a yoga class on the beach. And that was his thing. Some he did for free, some he charged for, and he was doing yoga on the beach. Well, the city of San Diego did not like that because they wanted to be able to tax it. You know, if you were doing it in a studio, you'd be paying business taxes and all this. So if you're going to teach people yoga out on the beach, you need to have a license for that. We need to be able to monetize it. We need to be able to tax you. Well, Nama Steve is like, I'm not stopping. Nama, screw you. So he decides he's going to go out. This happened June 1st on Saturday. And he's going to go yoga on the beach. Well, San Diego sent in park rangers to harass, detain, and pressure into signing some document of guilt poor Nama Steve. Here's the clip.
Folks that are here, I get it. Everyone's upset.
No.
I'm not happy.
You have to get that you're denying our first right.
We have the right to. We have the right to be here, sir. You are wrong. You have to understand that.
We're not taking payments.
There is no payment being taken. We're having a free expression assembly. We're engaging in free speech.
Of charging these people?
So there's two charges.
The problem with you're
not listening to
our government is on the wrong problem.
Okay, you're not. No. So you're going to deny who you are.
It's called Namaste.
Namaste.
Okay, thank you.
So that's who you are, right?
No, that's not my birth. No.
You're telling me that they have nothing better to do on the beaches in San Diego? I mean, San Diego's right by the Mexican border, so I know they have better things to do on the beaches. But just San Diego in general, you're going to harass poor Nama Steve, who just wants to breathe deep and get his yoga on?
Namaste.
You got to let Nama Steve
stay.
Namaste. So anyway, it's so indicative of the government and government overreach and big government. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't hurt San Diego at all to allow some people to yoga on a beach. And then somebody elsewhere in the video was pointing out, there's tents over there. There's homeless tents over there. That's not a problem. They tried to say, you know, the yogis, where this is a free speech assembly. We're here exercising, you know, our freedom of expression. And that wasn't enough. That's insane. And I really hope that this is one of those things that'll get people in California. We need an awakening up and down the West Coast. We need a West Coast awakening. And maybe Nama Steve can start that awakening in San Diego. I feel like people are waking up here. People are waking up in Portland. So maybe it'll all happen at once. All right, food prices are through the roof. Somebody do me a favor. If you go through a fast food drive-thru, take a picture of the menu for me, because I want to see how bad the prices really are. But in some places, the Big Mac at McDonald's is like $9. This is all, of course, tied to inflation. And so they're all operating on these tiny, tiny margins. So when the price to make a Big Mac goes up, they've got to make money. They're a business. They're in it for profit. So they've got to raise the cost of their Big Macs or their chicken tendies or whatever it is. Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital joined us on the show on Thursday, and we talked about the inflationary pressures that these businesses are under.
In order for these guys to maintain profit margins, they've got to push the incremental price of the products they're selling to a level that is beyond the reach of the average consumer. And, you know, free market capitalism isn't a perfect system, but the reason we've stuck with it is because it's better than everything else we've tried. And it seems like we have to relearn that lesson every 10 or 20 years or so in this country.
Yeah, that's true. Free market isn't perfect, but at the same time, you can't expect a business to just give out Mickey D's for
the
free. Goods for free. Before we know it, they're going to charge for ketchup packets. One ketchup packet for free. Okay. The second one, $60.
You already have to pay for the hot sauce at Taco Time.
Well, yeah, I think some of the more
the extras.
Yeah, the ranch dipping sauce and the
Yep.
Barbecue sauce. What do you dip your chicken tendies in?
Ranch with a little Frank's.
I like the BBQ.
Like, I want some hot sauce.
Yeah, I like the BBQ. Anyway, sorry, Zach, with Bulwark Capital. Just cutting in on our ad read. Zach is just a whiz with this stuff. And he hosts a weekly podcast at knowyourriskradio.com. Knowyourriskradio.com. They also do a daily dot. They push out some stuff every day. So you can just follow him for a good take on what's happening with the economy. But also, if you're interested in making sure that your retirement portfolio is properly protected against risk and inflation, make sure that you reach out to Zach and his team at knowyourriskradio.com. knowyourriskradio.com. They can do a free, absolutely no obligation risk review on your portfolio. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. All right, let's get to questions and comments, but also, can we start with our daily subscriber show poll? I asked you about campaign contributions. So does it bother you? Does corporate money, union money, do any of those things bother you more than others? So the question I asked, do any of the following types of campaign contributions bother you? Corporate money, union money, both, or neither? My answer is neither. I don't particularly care. I mean, it's all public record. It's not like you can shadowy donate to someone's campaign. I mean, you could donate to a political action committee, XYZ, but I'm like, you know what? I'm not looking at that stuff and saying, I'm not going to vote for you because so-and-so gave you money. So a lot of you are saying, though, that both bother you. On Patreon, Hugh says, people and organizations should be free to do whatever they want with their money. I side with freedom. Fawn says, government unions should have to collect dues directly from the members and must tell their members the amount they spend on political donations and that they can opt out. The largest political donor in the state of Washington is the WEA, Washington Education Association, by far. People need to know corporate donations are much smaller. Cheryl Hasselwood, unions convince their members that whomever they endorse is who they should vote for their own good. This is fact, and most members who disagree can't opt out of those donations. Yeah. Jane Palmer, I'd love to see all politicians be required to wear jackets clearly showing who they are beholden to, just like a race car driver. Some patches on there, corporate patches. Slim McFatty, politicians beholden to special interests, a common take, no bueno. Let me see if I've got one I can read on Locals, and then I have some thank yous to dole out today. Cap Tom, on Locals, union money when the elected official has people in that union reporting to them is a conflict of interest. Todd Welch, how individuals, companies, or other private organizations spend their money is their business. I will say a union is no different than a corporation. Yeah, I agree with that as well. Okay, can we do some thank yous quick, Nicole? You guys are so nice to us.
Yes, absolutely.
Where's my little thing? Hold on. Okay, we got some stuff in the mail. The mail. I feel like we should have a Blue's Clues thing. Okay, so we got these awesome cups.
Nicole. Yes. Oh, you want me? Let's see. I'll grab.
From Crafty Grandma Crispy. These are nice. It says, undivided. Good days start with common sense. Love that. Here's a little something crafty to commemorate the new studio. Congrats on the move. Keep doing the good work. We need it. And y'all, thank you, Crafty Grandma Crispy. I love this.
Mine says, but first, common sense.
But first, common sense. Okay.
Love it.
Got that. Let's move on. Let's move on here. This is a sweet little card. This is nice. You guys are so sweet to us. Hi, Brandy and Nicole. I sew while I listen to your show. So these were made while I laughed and cried at your insightful, fun, and heartening perspectives. Thank you. I think it's Lori. I couldn't read the cursive, but I'm pretty sure it's Lori. Thank you for our bags. Nicole and I can go to the beach with our fun beach bags.
Hawaiian theme.
Love it. Love it. That's awesome. And then one more.
Well, we have over here, we have from our friends over at the we're debating how to say this, but Helinka.
Yeah.
It's the Cultured Creamery, which is owned by Alex and Pete, who are brothers who brought us over there and gave us a taste of their creamery. But it's
you're really nailing this.
I'm really nailing it. What's it called?
Ice creamery.
Yeah, but it's more. Oh my gosh,
like
gelato or whatever. It's kind of that style. Anyway, but they gave us a tour of the market, and then we went to this really cool little teach you how to all the stuff about cooking and stuff. Yeah. Anyway. But they gave us these pins that they have, which I wish that I could get a closer
shot.
That
one's got like a...
This is like a Greek flag with in a heart. And then this one's a American flag with a heart. And it's kind of like in the Greek leg design. I like it. And there's four different ones, and they have them for sale there for $5. And we're going to work out a partnership. So one of these flags, the one with the thin blue line, goes to Washington State Patrol.
Yeah, so this is great. So they're Memorial Fund. They are working on partnering with us to raise money for our charity of the year, the Washington State Patrol Memorial Foundation. So stay tuned for more on that.
Yeah, but they also have them going to Chef Tracy. That's who gave us the little lesson or whatever. Anyway, one goes to her, Nourished Neighborhoods. One goes to the Pike Place Daycare. One goes to the Washington State Patrol. Anyway, lots of cool stuff.
So they sell the pins to raise money for good causes.
Stop by and get a pin.
I love it. So then they also
he also sent us aprons with the little Greek flag heart thing to give to our mothers.
Super nice. Super nice. Sandy will love it.
No, we don't.
And I'm also drinking this coffee with cash that a subscriber gave us from the meet and greet this weekend.
Mercury's. So thank you. He recommended Mercury's, and Brandy had not had it. So I went and grabbed it for us.
So you guys are just nice to us. Our shelves are overfloweth with gifts from you guys. And also, we just adore you.
Wendy Traynor's mom.
Oh, Wendy Traynor's mom.
Yes.
This was really sweet. So Wendy Traynor, of course, was murdered by her ex-boyfriend. And we, you know, were at the trial and really pushed hard, successfully so, with the family to try to get his sentence increased from a plea deal. So Tammy sent us some beautiful Glassy Babies.
So sweet.
And I know how much Glassy Babies cost. Those are an arm and a leg. I have this friend who collects Glassy Babies, Amy. And she gave me the, you walk in and she's got them arranged like in a rainbow pattern.
Oh, she has them everywhere.
And, oh, everywhere. And I, she was telling me how, oh, you can tell that this one's more expensive and this one. And I feel like the one Tammy got me was one of the higher end ones, but I love it. It matches my house. So and thank you, Tammy. That's so sweet of you.
A little tease for them. They're working on Wendy's bill. And so eventually we'll tell you more about that. But they are definitely, they are working with some legislators to come up with a solution to what happened to them.
I love it. You guys make me want to cry. I love you all so much. Okay. We had a super chat that we missed because it came in late in the show Thursday from Varcore, $10 super chat. The more people lose confidence in the system, the closer the system moves toward failure. I'm assuming that's either the election story because Bob Ferguson asked for special treatment or Donald Trump, one of those two.
Right.
All right. Varcore also said it's Monday. She'll forget the laptop and be doing her hair.
I threw in one, but a lot of people commenting before the show started about what they thought you were going to forget or be doing. I don't know what it was today about you.
You guys, really maybe every Monday you were just gonna fail. A disaster. I've been pretty good this morning, right?
Yeah. No, I've been absolutely. We were calm. We had Mike here helping us with
My husband came in this morning. He's so sweet. I just love him. Yep. He came in and brought a bookshelf in because we're still working on the set and stuff. And it was just nice to see his little face in the morning.
He hung a bunch of stuff for
us. He did. We were here late on Saturday. Was it? Hanging stuff and getting stuff done. I didn't forget anything. Jerks. I'm just kidding. And I did my hair. So, man, one day. All right.
You proved them wrong, Randy.
Thank you. On Bob Ferguson, Robin Hofstede says, shame on BNSF. My dad is rolling in his grave. Retired after 35 years with BNSF, would never vote Ferguson. And that is likely for an attorney general race. I didn't divide them by which race and which year, but BNSF, I checked, didn't have an active donation for Ferguson's campaign for governor. Because now he wouldn't accept that. Because now he's just so awake to the ways. Leland Taylor, the older I get, the more I hate the government. Hashtag Brandy's dad was right. I told you, I always use the photo of my dad who has the birthday shirt on that says, we're the IRS. We get our money the old fashioned way. We steal it. The older I get, I absolutely am more like my dad every single day. I understand him more too. I mean, not the drug addict, drink, alcoholic portion of him, but you know, other things.
You might understand that more too.
He was so upset with the government. They just drank himself to death. On migrants, Corey says, is that their name? Corey
on there.
Everyone, regardless of your party affiliation, should be outraged that they're spending taxpayers' money. I agree. We have an asylum system. So when it's being utilized appropriately, I don't have an issue with that. It's one of the wonderful things about our country. No one can look at what's happening and tell me, yep, that's how it's supposed to work.
Well, and we've got a lot of information about how they're being used as pawns, kind of, and people are abusing the system and using the money they're getting from them not the way that it's supposed to be used. And possibly, like, we'll probably have more to come on that because we're definitely watching that. But I know Jonathan Cho has exposed some of it, and people tend to be like, meh,
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Oh, well, it's, you know, they need it and stuff. And then it just is, oh, we need more taxes. That'll be the next thing. We need more taxes. Because now we have all these asylum seekers. The federal government's not helping us out. Trump would be in office. Mm-hmm. Like, if Trump gets elected, they'll spin it that way. Donald Trump won't give us any money for the asylum seekers that Biden sent here. So now we need more tax money. Mm-hmm. And people in their infinite generosity in Seattle will vote yes, and then we'll all be stuck with it. All right. Thomas Childs, I think every politician that's in favor of a sanctuary city or state has to let them camp in their yards. Yeah, let's see how that goes.
Not a bad idea.
Dee, hi Dee, complete hypocrisy. I love how Daryl comments on the show while he's monitoring the show for us. Complete hypocrisy. The progressives love talking about disenfranchised individuals, but only when it fits their narrative. But also, let's allow Gary Ridgway to vote.
Right.
That is such a good point. The Dems in our state are pushing a bill to allow Gary Ridgway to vote and serve on a jury. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh yeah, but Donald Trump's a felon.
Mm-hmm.
The Democrat voters can be felons, but not Donald Trump. Bobo, Biden should pardon Trump so that he returns the favor. Biden's never going to do that, but
Favor would be returned.
Yeah, and absolutely not. Absolutely not. Our country needs some sort of moment of unity. Maybe it'll be something. Somebody will be the bigger person. I don't know.
Usually that's tragedy, so let's not hope for that necessarily.
It's going to be an alien invasion.
It's
going to be an alien invasion. That's all. That's all. The only thing at this point that could unite us. Sergeant Pickles, the spoiler effect is the exact reason why I believe we need to switch to ranked choice voting, but the two parties fight to maintain the duopoly. Yeah, I think there's some good arguments to be made. I'm not totally sold on ranked choice voting, though. Ryan Hart, muting Trump from the ballot is un-American. Yeah, and you know what it is? It's an attack on our democracy. But they can attack the democracy. The others can't attack. It's all hypocrisy. Should we do one more on Fauci?
The media is so complicit.
It's so bad. Oh, wait, here's on Steve Hickey, the influencer, independent journalist who's being accused of being a squatter con man. Lieutenant Dan says, I like the reporting Steve Doc does. Not many go as far as he does. But if Steve is squatting, I hope he's held accountable. And we'll again hear from Steve Hickey on the show coming up tomorrow. I think he's done some sort of statements out there, put his own videos out, but I haven't seen an interview with him about all this that's as in-depth as the one that we did. So we're going to play part of that on the show tomorrow, and then we'll post it in its entirety as well. One more on Fauci. CP says, I got too comfortable trusting the experts, but now I do not trust anyone. I guess the only good thing that came out of the government's reaction to COVID. Be wary of trusting the government and, frankly, anyone you don't know.
I actually do think that is the thing that we can take from it is that everybody, the reason that they felt like they could put all those mandates on us and do all of that is because they knew everyone would just follow. And
they were testing.
They kind of had a feeling that it would just work.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of it, they pushed it too far and everybody said, nope, not happening. So I do not think that they could do it again in a couple months and it would be anywhere near as successful as they thought it was in the beginning.
I agree. Okay, thank you, Nicole. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. It is Pride Month, after all. So let's get into that in our closing sanity check. Oh, yes, it's not just Pride Month, but it is Pride Month in a presidential election year. That means you can prepare for Democrats to scare the hell out of gay people about their rights if they don't vote their way.
Hi everyone, Chair Shasti Conrad here with the Washington State Democrats, wishing everyone out there an incredibly happy Pride Month. We are so proud of all the progress that we have made in supporting our community and making sure that we are protecting the rights of the LGBTQIA+ community. But we know what's at stake. We have to do everything we can to protect our progress, while we know that there have been over 500 anti-LGBTQIA+ bills that the Republicans have been pushing at every level of government across this country. So we need your help. We need you to get involved. Help make sure that we are protecting our progress and getting us to November and winning up and down the ballot for our community and for all of us out here. So everyone have a safe and happy Pride, and we'll see you on the trail.
Yep. So enjoy Pride Month, celebrate it or not celebrate it, whatever you see fit. But if you are a LGBTQIA+ person, beware of Democrats trying to scare the hell out of you about your rights to distract from other failures. That and more tomorrow on Uninvited. Did you see how I was about to do the show open? Wow. That has been our sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. See, I had to screw up somewhere because everybody did that to me. They said in the comments, Brandy's going to do something. Brandy's going to fake it in computer and all this stuff. So then here I am with a perfect show. I mean, it was perfect. Just screwing it up at the very end. Anyway, if you've not signed up to support the show, you can do that. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. It's just $5 a month. What a smoking deal. Thank you again for all the kind things that you guys have sent in over the past month or so. We do accept free gifts, homemade. The more homemade, the better. Except not food. Probably don't send us homemade food. I don't think we would eat it. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.